And we are recording. Okay, great. So one sip of coffee and then we're done. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Web3 Leaders podcast. My name is Colin Fitzpatrick. Thank you so much for joining me. And today I am very excited to have a very, very important guest, the man who probably needs no introduction whatsoever, Sebastian Bourget, the COO and co-founder of The Sandbox, the biggest metaverse out there. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining me and a very, very warm welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Colin.
So I suppose, Sebastian, the reason I was super excited to get you on the podcast today is, well, I've used your metaverse, the Sandbox, for many, many years. I've been involved in the metaverse industry myself for about 3 years. I've used, seen, demoed, talked to many, many dozens of other metaverses out there. I keep abreast of it, but you guys are really pushing the envelope with what's going on. And I'm really keen to just nerd out and have a fantastic conversation with you about what you're doing. I suppose I'd like to start off by asking you about your background. I mean, what were you doing before this? How did you get into the world of metaverse? How did you decide to sort of co-found this, what would become a behemoth of the industry?
Well, so my background is I graduated from an engineering school, and around 2007, I met my co-founder and business partner, Arturo Madrid. Back then, we were already like in the face of new technology, and I joined him on his first startup, which was dealing around like one of the first application of peer-to-peer technology, basically like allowing users to download video on the TV and in high resolution using BitTorrent protocol to save on bandwidth costs. Then that company got acquired by a CDN network. We worked a few more months there, and then we launched an old platform, which was a service where users could upload their photo, video, and music in the cloud. Got unlimited storage and stream content from their friends. We sold that company after as well. And then in 2011, we started our third company, which was around like mobile gaming. We were one of the pioneers in the space developing games with already IPs like City Builders on one side, with Garfield, Snoopy, Family Adams, and more. Cool. And on the other side, like, we launched the first version of Sandbox on mobile. So like, Sandbox actually exists since 2011.
Interesting.
Always started with this idea that it's a user-generated content game. We wanted to empower anyone to become a creator, and how to do so by like using new technology. Like in the case of like mobile device, what's interesting is really the touch screen. Like now it offers like new controls. You play, and just by the touch of your finger, you could drop pixels. So start creating with your fingers little pixel-arted world in 2D. Share those creations to an online gallery where other users could try it out, play as well. And that had a astonishing success. We made more than 40 million downloads over time. 70 million creations were made by players. And over 8 years of lifetime of the game, we made 60 updates. We had over 500 elements. And in 2018, we've been acquired by a larger company called Animoca Brands out of Hong Kong, which are one of them as well, a pioneer in web blockchain gaming. Following that position, we didn't stop working on Sandbox. And actually, it came at a time where we first found about CryptoKitties and blockchain technology in general, Bitcoin protocol, proof of work, and CryptoKitties as the first blockchain game. And we found it was actually, it has something really interesting at the core, which is like those NFTs, those virtual cat as digital assets that users could buy, not from the developer himself, but from other players, and not in the game itself, but on the marketplace outside of the game. Where these were like two strong novelties that were not possible in video games before, actually came as a solution to a problem we encountered in Sandbox, which was like, how do we retain our top creators years after years? Like, people spend hours, days in creating, but social fame, social recognition of like their creativity wasn't enough, and we couldn't share a portion of the revenue we generated to them. And so we found NFTs. From there, we were like it's been 5 years already that we work on this new version of Sandbox. It's no longer just a game, it's a whole platform with 3D creation tool, a no-code game maker, a marketplace, a map, the avatar creators, and it came and it grew as this decentralized platform that is today with more than 400 large brands in entertainment, fashion, in culture, in gaming, and 23,000 landowners on this map. So very exciting metrics and a long journey for success in the making.
I want to get into the brands a little bit later because that's something I'm quite passionate about. But maybe you could explain a little bit, I suppose, let's back up. And for someone who's not as familiar with Web3 and the metaverse, maybe just give your own vision of how you define the metaverse and really where you see it going over the next couple of years. And what's your kind of long-term vision for what you really want the Sandbox to eventually become?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like we really see the metaverse as like this myriad of virtual worlds where like you as a user, you can access using your avatar. So that avatar that is like a 3D character that become your new digital identity. You take that character, you can access across all those worlds, all those platforms that makes up the metaverse. And what's new is really like, it's not like what we've seen for 20 plus years of like Second Life, World of Warcraft, Minecraft, Roblox, etc., where you play in one game and then you cannot go out. Here, you have your avatar, you have all your digital assets, your belonging, your wearable, your equipment, even your virtual land, virtual house, car, and so on. And you can use them across any of those worlds in a seamless manner. The first time users own their identity, own all their content, and they can use their content across all those worlds without having to ask the permission of the developer to transfer it, without having to connect some API or complex things. That's really the way we see a metaverse, like freedom of movement of users and their avatar, freedom of monetization as well. Like you can transfer a content to another user, you can sell it on marketplace the way you want. And that's where how Sandbox is contributing to that vision of the open metaverse. You can play with the content you bought or you create on Sandbox, in Sandbox, outside of Sandbox as well already. And you can play in Sandbox with content that comes from a lot all over Web3 ecosystem, all the most popular NFT collection as well.
I think that's an important point because that's one of my the things I find most interesting about Sandbox is you're very, very focused on the creator economy and also giving the vast majority of the profits to those creators, unlike some of the other platforms who really take a fairly unfair chunk. Just tell me a little bit about the thoughts behind your strategy behind that and where you kind of see that going.
Well, it's always been our mission. Like, how do we truly empower creator? And it's also like part of the story of Sandbox. Like, we've been so frustrated that we couldn't give back to the creators that bring the value that makes those platform grow, become successful, earn revenue, attract more users. We've seen that with Web2. Like, the success of Web2 comes only from contribution of users, but the platform have kept the ownership of the content and even monetize the users by collecting the data and using it to serve them as advertisements. In Web3, we want to empower users to own their data, create a product or service where like the content that they bring, they create or they earn or they own is theirs, so they use it the way they want. And they are not the product that's being monetized. They receive the value that they contribute. So in the case of Sandbox, 95% of that value goes into Sandbox, into the creator, and 5% into Sandbox. And how Sandbox keep growing over time is because like we feel like there is this win situation between like users, platform, and creators, studios, and businesses, as users no longer lose value. What they buy once still holds value, and maybe holds more value over time, because it acquires more utility and use case. That mouse that you buy, that pen that you buy, is no longer limited to be used in one place, but can be used across many places. Sometimes can grant more benefits. Imagine in a physical world that I think like you bought, I don't know, a pair of shoes, Nike shoes, but you could only play in a Nike stadium in the town where you bought it. That's nonsense. And yet that is what has been ongoing online since the creation of internet. The technology didn't enable us to have a system where you could have like trust, digital scarcity and digital value, and digital value with proof of authorship and proof of ownership as well. So those are core pillars that blockchain as a technology. And we give utility to those assets in the context of sandbox with the game maker, where you create experiences with avatar that are your digital identity, which you use to explore, keep your reputation, and interact with sandbox and beyond.
And let's talk a little bit more about that, because, you know, there's a lot of controversy around NFTs. I'm certainly an extremely big believer in the technology going forward, because we need a way to put, you know, value and ownership of digital assets on the blockchain. How do you see NFTs panning out, and especially from within Sandbox?
So we've been very attached from day one to showcase the utility of NFTs in Sandbox. We never said they were like just collectible, they were like gateway to many things, but you couldn't access them. We are very practical. Like, you own the land, you can use the land as a virtual real estate to develop and publish your experience. You own an avatar, you can use it and play it. And now, like, immediately as you buy it, you can play it into experiences where you will collect rewards by completing quests and meeting other users. All of that, I think, contributes towards like demonstrating for people like NFTs are tangible assets, and the metaverse is tangible. Like, it's not a far-fetched concept of science fiction inspired movie where like we do things that are far from real. No, it is like a lot of like immersive and social interaction gamified as you complete quests and progress toward like accomplishing goals to earn rewards. And you explore all sorts of experiences that range from like landmarks, galleries, art museum, gameplays, virtual concerts, virtual shows, but also touch topics of our life like events, education, and work now.
And what you said there was important. You know, what I've been doing for the last couple of years is delving into the world of virtual concerts in the metaverse, seeing where this is going to go. I mean, I believe that the metaverse is a wonderful potential, but we need attractions. We need utility. We need stickiness. I'm not so much of a gamer. I haven't been a gamer since I was sort of in my teens. Obviously, an awful lot of people all around the world are. But, you know, apart from gaming and apart from events and things like that, where else do you see in the future of the metaverse how else we're going to bring people in and keep them there and make it sticky?
So what else do we see? Like, fun? Like, let's be real. Like, we know that at the core should be products that enable creators to build a layer of fun. We don't necessarily know what's fun ourselves, but like by providing the tools to make fun things for creator, to push the boundaries of their imagination, to develop a new format of entertainment, they will figure it out. And we bring a lot of brands and culture for them to be able to mix, to remix into their own world. We surface content that would not typically be found. We create a space where many characters like behind me can be a mix and exist together as you've never seen before anywhere else. And that's new. And we find that people come and come back into Sandbox for the social interaction they have, the new friendship they develop, and the kind of light casual gameplay they can do, such as like platforming, treasure hunting, or exploration. Now we want to add much more. We've seen like success of Roblox, success of Fortnite, and all those Roblox top games is essentially around like parkour game, battle royale game, etc. So those are things that are possible soon in Sandbox as well, as like game maker, the core product of Sandbox is evolving to enable more of those possibilities. I think it's important to push people to go beyond just like let's come once, but let's come many times. that can be by reward, that can be achieved by a sense of progression and achievement, that can be achieved by essentially like offering like places and location where like they are indeed, like you say, like they discover things they would not see in the physical world, or adding value, or like who they can connect with, what kind of action they can do.
I think the wonderful thing about the metaverse is that it is in some ways like the world that we wish we had without the limitations of what we have. In the metaverse, you can appear as whatever you want. You know, you want to be taller, in my case, maybe. You may be a different gender. You want to be some fantastical character. You can do it. You want to fly. You can do it. What do you see is where some people are sort of pushing the boundaries of using the metaverse to do things that they can't really do in real life? I mean, obviously, socializing with people from all around the world. Okay, people have been doing that in games, but it brings that to another level. But then creating something kind of together, I see that as being something special.
Yeah, but you're right in saying, like, in the metaverse, you have, for the first time ever, the ability to choose your digital identity. And that identity could be not just like a human representation that looks like yourself, but can be totally crazy. Like, we bring even some of the most official brands, like Care Bears. You can play as a rabbit. You can play as like Ken from Feast of the North Star, for example, or Gordon Ramsay, or your favorite celebrity, yeah, Steve Aoki, Snoop Dogg. So that's some examples. You can... I think like that's interesting to play in that world where you cross all those different diverse and inclusive representation. We're seeing people use metaverse as well as force for driving positive impact, inclusion, diversity. Like I just was seeing today the announcement of like Amnesty International announcing the first virtual protest in Sandbox on land by a creator called Vistaverse, which is a way to show like, wow, the metaverse can be a way where we can peacefully express or support certain causes, no matter where we are in the world, and show like how they matter to us, no matter our identity as well. That's, I think, something strong that I think will set the precedent. We've seen people finding their jobs through their avatar in the metaverse. We've seen people organizing weddings in the metaverse already. We've seen art pieces where people contributed like a word of like, there is an artist called Coco Van, which created she goes into various cities in the physical world. She has this roll of paper and people can write anything they like on the paper, just like poems or a message of peace and love to the rest of the world. And over the year, it became an 800-meter long roll, which is way too long to be transported. I think it weighs almost 1 ton now. Mm. And in the metaverse, people can access it, can contribute from anywhere they are, and see some of those moments. We've seen museums that have been recreated in Sandbox while they are actually being closed for renovation. Landmarks and monuments. Shibuya 109 in Japan is present. And so it's a way to make more accessible and engage not just concerts or games, but also to launch new digital creator, to bring more culture. We have the first, yesterday was announced, the Hong Kong Philharmonic Orchestra is going to perform the first metaverse symphony. So playing live orchestra music, you can imagine that, and live creation behind. I feel it has the force to inspire us to do good and like to show different form of gameplays that no longer you can find on traditional platforms.
That's really cool. That's very, very cool. Let me ask you another question. What do you see as the hurdles towards metaverse adoption, and specifically from a technology perspective? I mean, if you look over the waves of technology that we've experienced over the last several decades, sometimes it just takes that iPhone moment. I'm really interested in your thoughts about this from a general perspective, and then specifically for the Sandbox. Would really like to hear what you think.
So there's a few things to consider. First of all, I think it's a space that you only start to understand this Web3 culture and what it means like to own an NFT and to use it by interacting into it. So you need to be present to be not only legitimate in the space, but start defining that, like, and experimenting. So it's, there's a lot of experimentation ongoing, and we don't know yet which will be like the final model of the iteration. But I know it's important to test things out to see how it's going to evolve. You're referring to that iPhone moment, but I've been for more than 12 years in the mobile industry, and it's not just the launch of the iPhone, it's the successful successive iteration of iPhone. First version of iPhone didn't have an operating system where you could build your app. Second version came in, and then came like better graphic, and then came Touch ID, and then came Face ID. And so from there, like, payments become much simpler than like having a tiny screen and you try to put your credit card number every time. Like, you were on the street and trying to fit your number. That was painful. Like, all those little iterations over time are building a better user experience. And the same way, like, free to play, which is a leading business model on mobile, it didn't come because all of a sudden it came because thousands of developers iterated, copied each other, improved, succeeded and failed, and so on. So we feel like content creator in the metaverse needs to, but the first step is to create your avatar for free, to explore what it is right now, what's the potential, to be inspired, to participate into those activation and moments with people, and then be inspired and hopefully create something that has a little variation and a little variation, and also use this, the social layer that the neighborhood of the map is, to become, to build something together that expand beyond your just your own land, like really scatter all around that map by having NFT of present, by using your identities that promote your own land and so on. And brands have been understanding that, like the first brand that stepped into Web3 and who are like serious about metaverse, they acquired a land in Sandbox, they launched their first experience, they've seen that they can engage audiences for like 60 minutes to 1 hour on average, which is way above any metric you would find over social media or gaming. And that gives them a lot of time and user attention to have a different level of relationship and value exchange with the community. That NFT is a gateway to create multiple activation, both physical and virtual. So we talk now about ownership relation management, not just CRM, and that the money they don't spend on those web media platform, which took away their audience and the way to reach them out, the more they invest in Web3, the better they build for the future and that relation to their audience. And it's interesting to see that shift and how Sandbox as a platform adds value to
them. Yeah, I think I completely agree. I mean, I've been delved into this for quite a while and talking to brands. And what I see is brands kind of, you know, their minds blown by the type of engagement they can get from end users in the metaverse. Be it a concert, an event, or whatever it is, they're used to generic advertising on a billboard, a video, whatever, incredibly hard to, you know, gauge how much real engagement you're getting. But when you're in the metaverse and you've got a brand who's fully developed into this event or activation or game or whatever it is, and you know, you have the users running around, you know, collecting stars, whatever it is, to try and get this coveted prize from, be it, you know, Nike or Coca-Cola or whoever it is, it is really elevating their thoughts about, right, how can we really take advantage of this, how can we just re-engage the customer with a deeper level into what we're trying to do and our brand, and also, you know, the type of outcome that they're looking for. Just this morning, I had on a friend of mine, Khalil, who's head of digital for Coca-Cola, talking about some of the things that they do. They just want to be present where anyone is happy and enjoying themselves. And they have so much latitude for what they can actually do and achieve. And they're doing some amazing stuff. And so are their competitors. What he was actually talking about, which was very, very exciting, was you have some of these really, really old school legacy brands who are completely reinvigorating themselves in this new world of Web3. And it's very, very exciting for them, where some of the other ones who are just, you know, letting this pass by, they're really letting up and they're missing out on a massive opportunity. And that's what we're able to provide. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with the brands and the sort of value that they're seeing out of utilizing the sandbox?
So what's exciting is like, we're no longer just in the phase like, well, brands are excited about the potential, they acquire land, but they haven't done something concrete. Like the first wave of brand that enter sandbox today, they already launched experience during Alpha Season 3 or during their own event. Some of them have launched their avatar collection as well toward their community. So they are progressively going through that funnel of engagement toward their community. And they are excited, really, like sharing about like if they wanted to like create this level of engagement, like I was mentioning, 30 minutes to 1 hour on average toward the user. I have like so many, so much like quests that's been completed by user within the world and so on. They would need to spend millions of dollars in traditional media. But what's important is like sandbox allow the CMOs of those brands to also show like how like they've been engaging more, how they've been reinforcing and rejuvenating the brands itself. Let me give you an example. Actually, it's a bank, like HSBC, acquired a land for the first time in sandbox. It only launched two experiences. Not only was like, wow for the rest of the world, because like, why a bank would buy land and build in metaverse, but it not only had a positive impact on them, like across the whole Hong Kong ecosystem where Hong Kong is like mother base for HSBC, but also for their 20,000 employees around the world. Like suddenly they became a cool brand that's connected with the audience that understands this. And like the employees themselves, they wanted to contribute, to build on it, to be present in it and so on. So that double positive effect. Because most of the time Web3 is carried not just by the top level management, but also by the member of the company, the employees themselves who want to push up those initiatives. And it's great when the two are aligned on how it can be used and they give a lot of freedom to experimenting. Mm-hmm. And we've started with Web3 native brands like Ledger, for example, but also like brands like Gucci, yeah. More traditional fashion luxury. Sure. The history of Gucci is all about experimentation. So it was so logical they are the first in the space, but we've started brands like Care Bears of Ubisoft and Raditz, South China Morning Post, K-pop stars and K-pop labels, for example. So it's very cultural. And in a way, for me, it's an essential element that we will see in the metaverse. User-generated content meeting like the culture of those brands in the physical world that open themselves to co-creation, open themselves to let their community define with them what they could become and not try to just copy what they already are in the physical world. That's part of the exciting things. Some of the brands have been selling more virtual wearables, like Tommy Hilfiger, as they launched to members, sold more like virtual clothes collection than the physical one. So also starting to become a promising avenue for revenue generation. And that's why like those JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley reports also like think like within 10 years, it will be like a $30 trillion industry that will really affect how we shop, etc. And that's how back to your first question, like where we see sandbox going over the next 10 years. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be an acceleration from like this is just like for now still a platform that only counts 4.5 million users to this is something much more like developed where I can work, I can learn, I can socialize, I can play and engage into all those different activities, express myself as an avatar that's realistic, all my content and develop my whole digital reputation and digital life online alongside like what I'm doing in the physical world.
Absolutely. What you said there was really interesting about these brands making significant revenue lines out of essentially their new digital business. I'm sure you've seen it like I have. There's a lot of people that just don't understand this. And they would be like, why would someone pay for something digital, you know, that you can't physically hold? Because that's what we're used to. And I always explain it to them. This is going back almost 3 years. I was asking a friend of mine, have you heard of this metaverse and NFTs? And he kind of said no, but actually then it kind of came around to him and he said to me, my son is 14. I said to him, we're going to bring you to the mall and we're going to buy you a new pair of trainers. And he said, no, dad, can I have that money to spend on my avatar instead? And this was this light bulb moment for him and, you know, a little bit for me kind of realizing where this is going. And I've seen it so much now. Clearly, the, you know, younger generation today have a very acute value for digital assets that, you know, people my age and older don't really have. How do you tend to explain it to people that don't understand it as to why this is happening and where it's going into the future?
So, well, bad luck for people who don't understand it yet. Like more than half of the world population now is like digital native. Like they have been born with technology. It's been over 25 years. So they are entering the age where like they are like young adults, decision makers. They start to work in companies. So they also influence the culture of those companies and what those users becoming customer want. Like digital natives, they don't have the same value system as they want. They don't dream of physical property, house, cars, or luxury products. They only dream about experience. And experience, like there's nothing better than virtual product and video games that deliver the best kind of experience and joy and satisfaction. So like when you buy virtual digital asset for your avatar, and more than 36% of users actually have bought content for their avatar in metaverses, like emotes and fashion, it's only 9% of sales, but it already represents hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue for Fortnite, for example. So I'll let you imagine the potential. And you're right, like most kids, they prefer to buy virtual content for their Roblox game and character, or even have like virtual birthday party in Roblox, rather than the physical local mall, etc. Why? Because they have more fun with their friends. They have better memories, more fun. And at the end of the day, reality, it doesn't matter if it's physical or virtual. Like the emotion we get, the feeling we get, they are real. Like people say they make better friends online than in physical world sometimes. And what brings them together at the end is the context, the experience, the celebrity. It's again the social.
I love it. That's absolutely incredible.
It has value. So it's not lost. Yeah. Like that father friend of yours that bought that pair of shoes, your kid, that his kid could actually keep them, sell them, trade them with others. Like it's not sunk investment. It's not sunk money. And I think as a parent, you should value that even more. Like I'm no longer wasting money on something I don't own. I'm investing on something he's going to be able to use and potentially reuse or resell afterwards.
That is fascinating. I love it. And you reminded me of something, and I'm sure you'll correct me, but didn't someone create a virtual Gucci handbag in the metaverse and sell it for more money than the real one sells in the store for?
So I believe so. Like at the end of the day, what makes a content, a digital content, valuable? It's provenance. Provenance and scarcity and utility. So you want to know like who created it, how many of them are there, and like how you can use it. And in terms of like fashion, digital wearable and so on, sometimes people will value more that there is only one copy in the world. It was created in 1998 by this creator, and there's no other way to get one around anymore. That's scarcity. Market price will define, like, if someone really truly wants it, they will put the price to own it. And either you sell or you don't. Typically, we've seen virtual houses actually sell for more than physical houses in the metaverse. They actually never break. They can be augmented. They are a place where you can host with your friends. And if you spend more time online, maybe you will want to actually invest into a property that's easy to resell, to customize, to upgrade, and so on. But we also saw like people spend on virtual avatars now in the region of thousands of dollars each in their fashion and etc. We've seen. I think like it all makes sense once you understand that, well, virtual world is a place where you make your friendship, your job, your revenue, your activity, as a creator or as a user.
I love it. Yeah, that's really, really cool. Tell me about Fidelity. I mean, the technology is rapidly advancing. You've got things like Unreal Engine. There's a lot of other metaverses out there that are building these more photorealistic style metaverses. Now, clearly we have a lot of technological hurdles. The amount of concurrent users, using things like pixel streaming without going down that. But you've obviously chosen to stay at where you are. And, you know, let's face it, kids playing Roblox have proved that they don't care about it being photorealistic. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts and what you have planned for Sandbox.
Well, that's a very good element, a very good question that you're asking. Like, photorealism is amazing. It looks great. It looks great in like theater movies, but it's not practically usable for creating at scale like a metaverse, which is accessible to 99% of people to create and runs on pretty much every device and et cetera. Like, technology doesn't allow that, skill set doesn't allow that. What I like about Voxel, which is like those 3D pixel that people use to create in Sandbox, they are some sort of digital Legos. Anyone can use it without reading the usual manual. If you want to create like photorealistic and real kind of graphic, you have to learn mastering a software like Maya or 3D Studio Max for many years. Mm. And that's why like cinematic graphic movies cost hundreds of millions of dollars to build and make. It's because like only very few skill set of people, high cost production and what. It doesn't work in the case of metaverse. Like if you want to build faster world, like where anyone can become a creator from the younger kids to the adult, you have to be something much more flexible, and Voxel provides that. Plus it runs on any device, it can be scaled up and down mathematically. That's I think something that's much more mainstream and tangible and deployable right now on the kind of device, mobile and desktop that we have with the computing power we have. And it brings like anyone can be a creator without a barrier to entry, which is important. Sure. We don't want to, as well, like fun doesn't need good graphic. You're right in pointing that. I think like Lego has proven that it's cultural, it's global. The Lego movie was amazing. What people don't realize is Voxel is also like a form of expression that goes beyond Sandbox. It's present. Now it's present in music clip, in a book, magazine. It goes outside of the virtual world and people recognize it. And in Asia, even more, like take Asia that represents more than half of the world population. Everything that they consume, all product, all advertising, is mostly based not just on like real actors, but on manga anime characters, tiny cartoon characters that sells to adults. So it's just part of common culture, you know, like that's representation. You find it cool, they find it fun, it's better, and it sells more than if like a real person, human realistic, were to promote and sell that product. So that the representation of cool and culture and what interests them, because it's so much surrounding them already that it doesn't need to be photorealistic, I think they understand, and the rest of the world will adapt to that progressively as well, into like, it doesn't need to be photorealistic to be fun. It doesn't need to be the future.
Absolutely. And this is something I've been thinking quite a lot about recently, and I'm kind of involved in a project that's going down this role. You know, like you said earlier, we are becoming more and more digital, and especially this, you know, younger generation who's grown up with the internet. I think I was 16 before I got the internet, but most of people now just can't even imagine it. We're now spending more time talking to our friends or our business colleagues on Zoom than in person. We spend more time texting our friends than we do talking to them or in person. So we're actually kind of already there. But I see that going one step further. And like we talked about earlier, our digital identities are becoming more and more important. just even having your avatar representation, Microsoft came out the other day and said that we're going to bring avatars into Teams. So you can be on a Teams/Zoom meeting and, oh, I'm really hungover, or the girl hasn't got her makeup on. She could just click a button and there will be your avatar. Now, I believe that right now people would look at that and go, oh, that's kind of weird. I don't like talking to this character. But it's a little bit like 10 years ago when Zoom kind of came about and people found it weird having a conversation with, you know, people on bubbles on your screen. And now we just think nothing of it. Where do you see that going, and how's that going to wrap into what Sandbox are doing?
Well, I think like people have no freedom is being removed, more acceptance is important, more that might even make us more accepting in the physical world as well about like difference, and it doesn't really matter how you look like to still have like meaningful interaction with each other. People with their avatar, they connect, they are friends, they take like group pictures and selfies in Sandbox already. And we're building to increase that diversity, to add more and more different representation, from popular characters to like user-created content, to intensify that. I feel like it's good, and I feel we are moving to I started to study that, like after like the me, physical me, and now like our virtual identity, how it can be represented into the multiplicity of virtual identity that we have online, and still how each one of them is still us. Meaning like when people online come to our avatar and do things like they are too close to us, they keep fighting against us, we feel harassed, we feel attacked, we feel not safe. So we, the physical us, is feeling something is attacking and aggressing our virtual self, and still it's us. So the representation we have of ourselves goes beyond our physical body, and that is a phenomenon that probably will intensify. And I'm sure, like, again, the philosopher will write a lot about that in the coming years.
Fascinating. What about the future of work?
Well, I think work, like Meta, offers like million of new job opportunity. You can become like a community manager, host, event manager, content creator, obviously architect, fashion designers that create only for digital avatars, with people creating emotes and animation dances for avatars already. And that's great. First, like it opens new opportunity for a kind of skill set that might differ from like what with physical world. Many people think like robots will replace us all in the physical world. So what do we have left? What's still human into what we can do as we interact? Well, creativity is one thing. Even if AI is challenging it, I feel like AI is actually helping us to be more creative and creating faster. Yeah. So that's also quite interesting in a way. All of it is tool to discover new talent and make content creation more accessible to anyone anywhere in the world.
That's a great lead on. I'm fascinated by AI. I spend most of my spare time reading, watching about it, and it's absolutely crazy. How is AI going to impact in the metaverse?
Well, so many great ways. Like we first, like I was mentioning, I believe like it's really a tool that helps creators to bring to life their ideas much faster than ever before. Like you can basically prompt a text and it will draw and design like characters or location or buildings. And what used to take days, once you had an idea, like you have to take your computer software to make them and to say, oh, I like it. Now in seconds, you get the rendering of it. It also helping the metaverse to make it actually more fun in a sense, non-playable characters can talk and behave better, can have more interesting quests for you to complete and dialogues. Safer as well in like the communication we have with each other, because it automatically removes toxicity in conversation. as well, like bring more life and interactivity, because like we can make avatars and characters that have movement captured directly from the analysis of video, live video streams. So people who are dancing, we can apply their dance straight to an avatar, and what used to take a lot of time to create is done in a app now. We're also seeing AI that's impacting like music generation, sound generation. Yeah. So all of that is helping to create a better immersion, better feeling of like we are here in a space that that takes us to the next phase.
Do you see? I was talking about this with one of my other guests. Significant legality issues. I mean, you've seen. I think there was a Jay-Z video that went out the other day, and it was, oh, you know, Jay-Z singing a new song, and it wasn't. It was AI. I mean, someone created that. We're getting so close now. I've seen Google's AI tool where you could just with text describe a song you want, and it'll create it for you. Absolute minefield potential of problems. I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah, well, for sure. Like, I think like the challenge is essentially like how, like right now AI is not creating from scratch really. So we have to have like the proof and the provenance of like what is the source content that is being used when AI is actually creating a new content from there. And like that's something that blockchain can resolve, because you have all the history of the content, the proof of whose authorship, who is the original author of something. And I feel like that should be encompassed right from the beginning, and maybe like a framework around AI is probably already being discussed. Like AI has to disclose like the source, credit the author, the right of like having the paternity of like an idea of a design is still important to respect creators. And that's something we try to do at Sandbox. It's always like we are creator first, and we want to protect creators, virtual one and physical one. That's why we work hard to bring only official licensed content on the platform as well from there.
I have another question for you, Mom. I think the metaverse has been through an incredible hype cycle. I talk about being in the days when I talked about the metaverse and people would look at me like I had two heads, and then, you know, fast forward a year or two, Mark Zuckerberg comes out, renames Facebook to Meta. Everyone bananas. You know, it was never going to explode onto the scene. And then AI seems to have like swept up everything. And people are, there's headlines such as the metaverse is dead, which I think is insane that people are saying that. How have you dealt with that? And any sort of inputs or thoughts on Meta and Horizon Worlds?
So, well, let me reassure you, the metaverse is far from dead. It's actually building at Sandbox. Like
it's only being born.
Never been into a hype cycle. Like we started building when crypto market were like something crypto winter. We've been still building, and we're still building today. We're seeing more and more brands entering to become landowners, more users who are like participating into the experience or buying an avatar or creating an avatar. The avatar sales and end sales are gone and selling out. So no problem on that side. What's still like, and as we are going to enable self-publishing this year, I feel like it will even accelerate that adoption as like more project, more will be open on the platform, as Sandbox is still a platform in beta with just a few events live at some point. The strategy of like, Facebook rebranding itself as Meta has really put a big shine of light on the overall ecosystem, which has been driving it. I think like there's really a recognition that Metaverse spoke into all research. People were suddenly interested into it and so on. So that brought people in. Some people are still here, and that's for good. The one that are left, they were probably not here for the right reason, and they are already jumping to the next bandwagon. I've been building with my co-founder Sandbox for, like I mentioned, 10 years, and probably will take us 10 or 20 more years to keep building that whole vision. But we're committed, and that's what matters at the end of the day. And that goes to like, well, it seems like Meta wasn't that committed after all, since after 2 years, they already started to put a pause or maybe their approach to force the hardware and the software together to push like the metaverse as virtual reality only was wrong. I do believe so. Like, I believe the metaverse is not, it's far more than virtual reality only. The fact that they are a company that represents essentially the Web2 business model of like capturing user data, owning it on instead of the user and using it for their advertising model, is so far away from the ethos of Web3 that it's been even harder for them to reinvent into like bigger companies that embrace like user ownership, opening access, using wallet, and so on. So that is a struggle that that was not part of their strategy, but that definitely would have been a big struggle from them.
Sure. I think you kind of semi-answered this already, and I like what you said there about, look, if there was people coming in and they weren't sticking, they were gone, then they were not there for the right reasons. We saw Decentraland's Fashion Week happen a couple of weeks ago, and the numbers were not quite where we would hope they would have been. What's your thoughts on that, and what are the learnings to hopefully make sure that, you know, the next one or other metaverse events continue to build in the right direction?
Well, I think like what the team at Decentraland has done is always like very, we should recognize the efforts. Like, they brought together all those brands. You had Tommy Hilfiger as part of it. You had Alo Yoga as part of it. And they were really leading the charge in terms of like integration, being present. They've done a great job that should be considered for this second edition. And I believe that it's starting to become something that years after years, like, will potentially shape to become like Fashion Week. Like, Fashion Week didn't become something out of the blue from the first start. Like, most amazing festivals make a name after like second or third iteration. It's because of word of mouth, because of like the creativity that drives people, and because like the platform will keep improving over time, that like it will become something meaningful. And the story will say like, I was part of the first one, I was part of the second one. Oh, I only joined in the 10th one. Like, I never went to Coachella or to Burning Man, but still like the legend itself makes me want to go there now. And the people who were at the first one, like, great for them. Like, they were like visionaries, etc. So I feel it has this potential. And Sandbox also will work into a metaverse fashion festival to bring brands to show some of the possibilities. I feel also like every virtual world platform try to cater to a certain audience. So the audience of Decentraland is a certain kind of audience. The audience of Sandbox is a different audience. And in fact, like, let's see what comes from it. Like, I think it can also be interesting.
Very, very true. And so, last question, because I know you got to go. What's exciting? What's coming up? What can we see next, and what should we be looking out for in the Sandbox from you and your team?
So, like, we are still very committed to like develop like the tool of the platform in sense of like upgrading Game Maker, upgrading VoxEdit to empower even more the creators. This year, the big objective is like self-publishing, so enabling any landowner to open their lands to their community, to start monetizing it the way they want through NFT gating, why not? And that will drive a greater diversity of content for people to explore with their avatar. And I think that's something pretty exciting to look forward. We'll release new land sale on the map, new curated region from Hong Kong with Megacity 3 coming at the end of this month. We have a K-verse new region, music-verse, movie-verse, all of cult region that will be opening progressively and showing different experiences is quite exciting as well. And continuing to demonstrate possibilities around like interoperability, playing around with your favorite NFTs, launching your new NFT collection for many creators. Those are essential things. And at the end of the day, it's a world that we want to be owned and governed by the community. So putting in place a DAO is also quite important for us.
That's very exciting. I look forward to it. Sebastian, thank you so much. It's been an invigorating conversation. I've really, really enjoyed it. Hope to have you back at some stage in the future when you have more exciting developments in Sandbox. And again, thanks for coming, and I look forward to connecting again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Martin, and bye bye everyone. See you in the metaverse.